Hello, everybody. My name is Desi Saran, and I'll be your host today for Restaurant Innovation, where we are building the future of hospitality and technology. So, as my brain is about to explode and I'm really thinking about this, and I'm trying to figure out where all the food is coming from, right? Have you ever opened up your Uber Eats or your DoorDash, you ordered your food? Do you ever wonder where it's coming from? Think about it. Where is it coming from? Does that restaurant actually exist? It's a really, really valid question, right? So, have you ever passed it? Have you ever drove past the restaurant that you ordered from? You know, Fajita Pete's or Mike's Tacos or the ice cream shop. Does it exist? Right, so this makes you think now. When you're in a high volume metro area like New York City, I don't think most people care, first of all. You know, but the other thing is, like, it's so hard to backtrack this, where your food's actually coming from. You know, there's food coming from all sorts of places, tight kitchens, people are sharing spaces. So, you know, if you're looking it up, you know, Uber Eats or DoorDash, they will show the address of where the food is coming from. You can look it up. You can just pop in the address on like Google Maps, and that'll show you where it's coming from. Right? And chances are it's an actual restaurant, or it could be an actual ghost kitchen. You could see that it doesn't exist, or it might be overlapped with a restaurant and it might be coming out of that restaurant. So it's something to think about, right? So I'm in my house, my home office in Edgewater, New Jersey, and I'm scrolling through all the different listings and I'm trying to figure out if some of them are ghost kitchens or not. And there's a listing that really, you know, catches my eye. It's called the Ice Cream Shop. Really professional pictures. If you guys are located in New York City, you've probably seen it. You know, it's there's a bunch of them. It seems like there's a chain. If you Google the Ice Cream Shop, Uber Eats, you'll find them, right? So what was unusual was that you can order ice cream, but in pints, right? So they're not even taking the ice cream out of the carton or pint. I'm thinking to myself, that's, you know, it's a little bit lazy, right? You're ordering from Uber, DoorDash, you kind of expecting the final product, right? Like an ice cream sundae, they scoop it out, they pour syrup on top, maybe put a cherry or banana. You know, if I want to order groceries and order ice cream, I can open up Instacart or one of those grocery apps, right? So I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, you know, this is getting a little lazy now. There's listings going up and the operator is literally just putting the pints of ice cream into a bag as the driver shows up. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is not an ice cream shop. This is coming out of somebody's restaurant, somebody's freezer. This is so easy to do. Anybody could do this. Anybody can order pints of Häagen-Dazs or Ben & Jerry's from a distributor, order them in bulk at $2-$3 a pop, sell them on Uber for $6-$7, right? Easy. Just all you need is a freezer and a commissary kitchen, right? So I'm looking up the address and I'm backtracking up the street from me. And what do you know? The address that I find on Google, and nothing else is around it, is an Exxon gas station. You believe that? An Exxon gas station. And in that Exxon gas station, there is a Tiger Mart, I think it is, or the Bodega. Now, it doesn't take rocket science to figure this out. They have the freezers and fridges in there full of all the, you know, all the goodies. You go in there when you stop to get gas and pick up candy bars and sandwiches and cigarettes and gum and ice cream whatever. This operator, the bodega operator, is literally moving his product, moving his ice cream through Uber Eats. It's mind-blowing. It's actually genius. He does not have to wait for a car to pull up to get gas, for the driver to come out, come into the store, and then maybe buy the ice cream. He's moving it. The driver, the customer is buying it online. A driver that he doesn't employ comes and picks it up. He just has to put it in a bag, and he's just moving it. So this is innovation at its finest. This is being clever and being able to move your inventory and product in a really, really clever way. You know, if you look at the listing, you think it's like a real ice cream shop. There's professional photos. You know, I'm thinking that there's a third party involved. There's probably a company called the ice cream shop that sets up these gas stations or bodegas or wherever else and helps them get set up. But think about this just macroeconomically. There's now logistics and infrastructure to move product out of stores, groceries, restaurants, now bodegas, not even final product, the inventory, moving it to the customer's house, the last mile. This is what delivery and the future will look like. You will be able to order anything you want, and it will get to your house quicker and quicker and quicker. So I want to say early 2019, around January, February, I was doing what I usually do, a lot of research, reading about blogs, other restaurant chains, some of their strategies and what they're doing. And I kept coming across the word ghost kitchen, cloud kitchen. You know, it was funny because I kept seeing it. I kept digging and going down the rabbit hole. And there wasn't a lot of literature on this. There wasn't a lot of you know, you didn't see this in the news. It wasn't publicized. There was nothing about this. And naturally, that really piqued my interest. So what I discovered was a ghost kitchen, also known as a dark kitchen, a cloud kitchen, a delivery-only kitchen, delivery as a service. These are kitchens where a brand or a concept is put on a third-party platform such as Uber Eats or DoorDash. And typically customers don't come into the restaurant and the food is just delivered through the third-party delivery drivers, right? So technically, to operate one of these bad boys, all you need is a commissary kitchen, right? You don't even need a retail space where customers can come in. You need a kitchen to fulfill the orders. You need a tablet for the orders to come in through Uber Eats or DoorDash or Grubhub. You need staff or chef or cooks to fulfill the orders. And the drivers need to be able to access the kitchen and pick up the orders, and that's it. And this is something that when you think about it, it makes sense, right? It's genius. And what I found out was that this was common practice, especially in metro and high traffic, high volume delivery areas, right? So think about New York City. That's a prime example. In New York City, you have a ton of third-party delivery, right? Think about all the people that work at the office and they don't leave the office, so they order delivery. Or when people come home from work, they don't want to go grocery shopping, or they don't want to go back out to eat. Delivery is so easy. New York City has the infrastructure and logistics with platforms like Relay, where they fulfill orders with just bicycles, right? So these guys are getting around really quickly. So it's very common for operators to operate ghost kitchens or, you know, brick and mortar restaurants to also have ghost kitchens operating out of the back of their kitchen, right? So there's different models and different ways to go about this. You know, but what I discovered is that this was pretty common. This was something that was growing, and this was a way to grow your business and essentially expand your sales with one kitchen or one space. Now think about it. You could have one concept out of your space, two concepts, five concepts, 10 concepts, right? What if they shared a lot of the same type of ingredients? You had 10 different listings across Uber, DoorDash, Grubhub, and Postmates, right? So if you're listing on all four and you had 10 different listings or concepts times four different third-party platforms, that's 40 listings, right? It's kind of like you have 40 restaurants or 40 stores where all of these orders are coming in through tablets and you're just fulfilling it. I've been to ghost kitchen concepts in restaurants where they literally had 40 to 50 to 60 tablets just pinging and going off all day. And they're just fulfilling orders. It's pretty wild. And I'm gonna go over that. I'm gonna go over that story and really go over the different types of ghost kitchens. You know, there's different ways of going about this, like I said, where you can operate, you can license your brand out, you can license other brands kind of like a franchise and create products and pay a royalty. You can rent out ghost kitchen space. You know, we're even seeing really, really creative concepts now where ghost kitchens are operating out of, you know, really small spaces like shipping containers, right? So people and companies are getting really creative right now. And, you know, this is really an interesting time for this because we're going to see a lot of innovation.
So let's talk about the different types and models of ghost kitchens, right? Now, this depends who you are. A lot of you guys listening out there, you might be a first-time entrepreneur, a first-time restaurateur, or thinking about starting a restaurant or food delivery business, right? If that's the case, then we can think about different model types right now. So right now is probably not the best time to start a brick and mortar or restaurant with COVID-19 and the pandemic and the restrictions all over the United States, especially in the Northeast, right? You have customers that are not coming into restaurants. So the entire industry has shifted into bringing the food to the customer, right? So the entire industry has shifted into off-premise, which is comprises of delivery and mainly third-party delivery. And when we talk about third-party and we reference third-party, we are talking about DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats. So if you are a first-time restaurateur, right, and you're thinking about opening a restaurant, again, this may not be the best time, although you might be able to get really, really good real estate and rental deals right now because nobody is renting out spaces right now and landlords are getting desperate. I don't think we're going to see those price slashes just yet. Mind you, it's mid-October 2020. I think as we enter further into winter, you're going to see a lot of the real estate bubble or real estate, commercial real estate market crash, and you're going to see a lot of prices. So there's deals out there for all you ambitious types that may actually want to open a restaurant. Do you want to be a bit more conservative and you have a lot of time and you are thinking about opening your own restaurant and you've decided that it's way safer to build your own ghost kitchen or delivery only business? It's totally feasible and totally doable. And you can incur a lot less risk this way. And, you know, this is a good way to try out and test your concept and your model. You can test your food, get it out on delivery, get it into people's homes, into their mouths, and see if people like your actual food and your concept. And if things pan out and things work out in the future, you could perhaps think about opening your own brick and mortar restaurant, maybe 6 months, a year down the road. So let's talk about these different types of ghost kitchen models. If you are a first-time restaurateur, first-time operator, and you don't have a restaurant right now. So if you're a first-time restaurateur and you are thinking about opening your own, your first ghost kitchen or delivery-only business, there are several models that make sense here, right? Now, if you sign up with a third party such as Uber Eats, Grubhub, DoorDash, you will have to build your food out of a commissary kitchen. That means a commercial kitchen, right? So you have to rent out a space, you have to get licensed, you have to get a health inspection from that town or city. Now, if you Google online or you YouTube, there are pranksters out there that started an Uber Eats concept or a delivery concept out of their apartment, right? It's totally possible. You can cheat the system, you can trick it. You'll probably get caught and end up getting shut down. But guys like that did that. They got tons and tons of views on YouTube just as kind of like a stunt. It really makes you think about when you order food through these third-party services, where is the food actually coming from, right? And you think about it, you don't know. You can trace it on the map, like as I discussed before. Chances are, it could be a shared space. It could be a ghost-only kitchen, a delivery-only kitchen, or a commissary kitchen. So to go back about where you start your kitchen. So the first thing I suggest is finding commissary kitchens, right? You can rent out a really small space. The key and trick with real estate is to you want to acquire as little space as possible, right? You want to understand if you're going to cook or you're not going to cook. I run a concept where we don't cook, right? The only equipment that we have in our spaces are refrigeration and freezers, which makes it really scalable and easy to build. Now, when you rent out a commissary kitchen, the chances are is that that kitchen will already have the equipment that you need, right? So if this is your first time, you're testing out a new concept, you just want to put it out there on, let's say, Uber Eats and DoorDash, right? If you found a commissary kitchen with all the equipment you need, and it's a small space and the rent is really affordable and doable, and you can somehow manage to negotiate a really short lease, let's say 6 months, let's say a year, I think that's a win for you because you can test out your concept with little risk. You're not locked into a long-term lease. Mind you, that most commercial real estate leases can last 5 years, right? With an option to renew for another 5 years. They can go as long as 10 years, right? So if, again, if you're a new restaurateur and you're thinking about just doing a delivery-only business, you want to bring down that risk level, okay? So if you're testing out, the first thing I would do if I were you is look for a commissary kitchen. You can Google online commissary or commercial kitchens near me. There's been a bunch of aggregators or search platforms that are popping up. Really popular one is The Kitchen Door. I believe it's thekitchendoor.com. You can search commissary or shared kitchens. This is perfect for that use. I've seen another one called, I believe it's Kitchen Lend. So there's more of these platforms popping up. And I think with the pandemic, this has created this space, not created, but expedited the space where more and more people are searching for this type of kitchen. Because remember, people and customers are not coming into the restaurants anymore. So really ambitious and innovative entrepreneurs and restaurateurs are figuring out how to create their food and their products and get it to the customer via third party, right? So again, the first thing you want to do is look for a commissary kitchen. Now, if you can't find a commissary kitchen, the second method I would suggest is reaching out to local restaurants or even kitchens in the area, right? What about a restaurant in your area that's struggling, that may have extra restaurant space or even using it in hours that they don't use it? Think about some of these full service restaurants that could be shut down right now completely, or maybe they're only operating at limited hours. A lot of full service, they open after 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock dinner. What are they doing with that space prior, right? You mean that you ran a daytime concept, a breakfast concept, and you can get in the space and utilize it from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., 5 p.m., right? So there's a lot of possibilities out there, and that opens up a way for you to negotiate with that existing restaurateur or that existing tenant to do some type of short-term sublease. Again, the idea here is to mitigate your risk to do this short-term and to get to proof of concept. You want to make sure that when you list your products online and your food, your staff can go in there, make the products, and your customers actually like it. You want to see how far this can go and if this is scalable. So again, finding a local restaurant in the area to partner with, that has extra space or times they're not using it is a very easy way to pick up an extra space or for a first time space for yourself. And even think about getting creative, right? So think about kitchens in the area, school kitchens, cafeterias, right? Even residential buildings have kitchens that they may not be using, or commercial kitchens. I know a really good group located in Chicago. These guys have about, I think, 20 concepts under one roof. I actually visited them and I saw, you know, them putting out 20 concepts within 1,200 square feet. The second space they acquired in Chicago was a residential building that built out this beautiful commercial kitchen. And I think we're going to open up some type of cafeteria or maybe even a restaurant for the residential building. It didn't pan out. So they had all this brand new equipment, beautiful equipment just sitting there, nobody using it. So those guys went, they cut a deal, they rented out the space, and they struck a home run deal where they got brand new equipment. They didn't pay for any of the equipment, guys. So that's another key thing here is that if you're first time, you don't want to go out and start spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on commercial kitchen equipment. It could be so expensive, plus the build outs, the construction costs. You don't want to go that during this time, during this pandemic, and especially if you're a first-time entrepreneur. So what I would recommend is to find a space, a commissary kitchen again, or an existing restaurant, an existing kitchen. See if you can rent it out short-term. If you can rent it out short-term, you can get in there, you can start operating. You know, but the next step would be to register your business entity, get a health inspection and all of that. So these are two really easy methods. If you are a first-time entrepreneur or a first-time restaurateur, you want a food delivery business. It's not that hard to find a space right now. Now, let's talk about existing entrepreneurs, existing restaurateurs like myself that may have one restaurant or multiple restaurants. How do you get into the ghost kitchen game, the cloud kitchen game, the delivery game? For those of you that are operating right now, chances are you're probably using third party. DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats. I personally have a love-hate relationship with these companies, right? I don't do delivery myself, and I think a lot of concepts and a lot of restaurateurs have kind of moved away from doing their own delivery, or also known as first party delivery. Why I've never done it. There's a lot of liability. Your insurance rates can go up, right? You have to hire delivery drivers that are unreliable. And it's just a whole different animal and a different aspect of your business that you have to worry about. Now, when you set something up like Uber Eats, DoorDash, Grubhub, the beauty of it is twofold. One, it's like setting up an account with Amazon or selling on Amazon. Once you set up your account and you list it and it goes live, orders start coming in like magic. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. Think about how many users that Uber Eats has, that DoorDash has, right? So utilize that, take advantage of that. Once you put your listing up and do a little research of what the best third-party delivery companies are in your area. I know where we are in New Jersey, the stronger ones are DoorDash and Uber Eats and Grubhub. Postmates is actually pretty weak in a lot of New Jersey. So I like third party because you can list and the orders come in. And when an order comes in, the driver magically shows up, right? So the driver shows up a little bit later, they pick up the food, they bring it to your customer, and guess what? You don't have to worry about any of that. All you need to worry about is making good food, getting it on time, and making sure that the customer enjoys it. And yeah, there's a lot of cons about going through the third parties. They charge really high commissions, first of all, 30%, which, you know, they've built a model that is a lose-lose-lose situation, which I always say, where because the commission is 30%, every restaurant has to increase their prices to offset those commissions. Now think about that. Most of my products are $10, okay? My profit margin is mediocre, just like any restaurant. I mean, most restaurants are probably under 10%. I'm in fast casual, so my margins can range anywhere between 10 to 20%, right? So on a $10 item, I'll make $2 if I'm lucky, right? Most likely $1. If the commission is 30% for every item that's sold, they're taking $3 off. I am losing $2. I'm losing 20% on every order. Therefore, I have to increase that price. Now, how much do I have to increase it by? Let's do the math, right? One would think right away, if it's a $10 item, just increase it by 30%, $3 to offset it, right? So now you have a $10 item. It's increased to $13. Does that offset the price? No, it's wrong, right? So if you actually take 30% off of 13, it's 390, okay? So if my price is $13 and the commission is 390, my net price is $9.10, okay? So that 90%, that 90 cent spread between 10 and 910, that was my entire margin. That's being paid back out to commission. I repeat, if I sell an item that's normally $10 in store and I increase it to $13, Uber Eats will take a 30% commission, which is $3.90. That leaves me with $9.10 when I should have priced it at $10. That 90 cents was my profit margin. So we really need to be smart about how we price our items if we're going to do the third-party route, right? We need to be smart about how we price our items. So what do I need to change my price to? $15. 15 bucks. Sounds like a lot, right? If I'm selling an acai bowl, a wrap, a salad, that's normally $10 in store, will a customer pay $15 for that online through Uber Eats, through DoorDash? In my experience, the answer is yes. The customer will pay for that. When a customer opens up their app and they open up Uber Eats, they open up DoorDash, they have already made the decision to order delivery. Now, once they make that decision, they're going to place the order. So to continue the economics here, my $10 item is now priced $15 online on Uber Eats. A customer purchases it, and now they are charged taxes, tips, delivery fees, surcharges, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That $10 item they could have bought in store is now $22 on delivery, but the customer will still pay it. Why? Because it's convenience. Customers are paying for convenience. Remember that. They're not paying for food. They are paying for convenience. They want to press one button and they want their food to magically appear at their house. There's a premium for that. So don't be afraid to increase the pricing, and you need to go over your economics, because chances are you're probably losing on every item, on every food item that goes out to Uber Eats or DoorDash. You need to calculate that. You need to reevaluate it and figure out if you're losing money or not, because chances are you are. Now, to go back to what I was saying before on why this is a lose, lose, lose situation, there are three parties involved, right? You have the restaurant, you have the customer, and then you have the third party, which is Uber Eats or DoorDash, okay? So Uber Eats just charges 30%. But they've also built a model that's not profitable. It hasn't been profitable ever, right? So they built this model that's all over the world, and they charge 30% commissions, and they still cannot get it profitable. It's a lose for them, for the restaurant. We need to jack up our prices by a lot. You know, in this case, it's not 30%. It's actually 50%. I just had to increase an item from $10 to $15 to actually offset the commission to make sure that I come back to my normal base price of 10. So I actually didn't increase by 30%. I increased by 50%. That's a losing proposition for me, right? I don't want to charge my customers that much, but the customers will still pay it. So that customer, in the example that I just gave, that could have came into the store to purchase it for $10, ended up spending $22 after all was said and done. And remember, you didn't put a gun to their head. They made the decision. We're all guilty of doing it. I do it all the time. There is a stickiness factor, okay? When a customer opens up that phone that for and opens up their app, that their Uber Eats app or their DoorDash, again, they made that decision to order, right? Very rarely, think about your habits and what you do. If you're hungry and you open up the Uber Eats app, you're not going to browse through and then say to yourself, you know what? I'm not hungry anymore. I don't want to pay these prices. You're going to order it. There's no food in your house. You're going to order. So unfortunately, because of the economics of what the third parties have built with these 30% commissions, we have to increase the prices. It's a loss for the customer. It's a losing situation for us as a restaurant. And it is a losing situation for the third party companies because they haven't made it profitable. Will this change in the future? We would hope so, right? We would hope that we can get prices under control. What I see is a lot of these companies going the route of subscription services, which they're already enacting, right? You pay $10 a month as a subscription, you get free delivery, et cetera. Uber Eats rolled it out, DoorDash rolled it out, and that's the wave of where these are gonna go. Can these companies get that model profitable? We hope so. We would hope that would affect commissions. And you know, another thing is that because of the pandemic, there's been regulation to decrease the commissions, right? New York City did it. I think they decreased it down to 20 or 10%. The only other place in New Jersey that did it was Jersey City. I think it's 20%. And I think Mayor Fulop enacted that in Jersey City. So there are certain parts of the U.S. right now that are regulating the commissions because it's really crushing the restaurant, right? Imagine in the middle of a pandemic, you want to be able to not even just sell your products, survive, right? You want to survive. And a lot of your survival involves selling on third party, right? Your entire model pivoted from in-store sales, indoor dining, right, to all third party delivery. And Uber Eats and DoorDash has their hands in your pocket and they're taking 30% out. So be smart. Go over the economics. If you have questions about it, you can feel free to reach out to me, you know, info@restaurantinnovation.com. We're actually building a course about this, but it is super important to make sure that your pricing right now is profitable. Otherwise, you're going to lose money on every item that leaves your restaurant.
All right, guys. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of Restaurant Innovation. Ghost kitchens and cloud kitchens are certainly a hot topic, and we're going to see a lot of this in the near future. I think the entire industry is pivoting towards delivery models. So, you know, you're going to see more and more of ghost kitchens, dark kitchens, virtual kitchens in the news. If you'd like to learn a little bit more, you can shoot us an email at info@restaurantinnovation.com. Again, thanks for listening, and check out our website at restaurantinnovation.com. where we list and host some of the best software for the restaurant industry. So thanks for listening.